This Moment of Science comes from Indiana University. We're on the web at amomentofscience.org, where you can view videos and sign up for podcasts. I'm Don Glass.
In sports this afternoon in Milwaukee, Jordan Crawford, a transfer from Indiana, scored 17 of his 28 points in the second half, and Xavier continued its run of NCAA tournament success with a 65-54 victory over Minnesota in the first round of the West Regional. Xavier will be in the second round for the fourth straight year, this time under first-year coach Chris Mack. Number 12 seed Cornell upset 5th-seeded Temple 78-65 in Jacksonville, Florida this afternoon. And in Buffalo, number 2 seed West Virginia beat Morgan State, the score there 77-50. The nation's consensus seems to be that without Robbie Hummel, Purdue has no chance in the big dance. Purdue guard Chris Kramer notes that even President Barack Obama is picking 13th-seeded Siena to beat the 4th-seeded Boilermakers today. Illinois begins play in the Women's National Invitation Tournament tonight. The Illini are on the road against Western Kentucky in Bowling Green. And the Chicago Bulls face LeBron James and the Cleveland Cavaliers tonight at the United Center. The Bulls' 9-game losing streak has dropped them 2.5 games out of playoff position in the Eastern Conference.
When we were at the Sweet Corn Festival, we brought health and wellness to the community. Everybody knows exercise is good for them, but if we can make it easier for people to be active, then they're more likely to do it. The goal of the Champaign-Urbana Public Health District is to get the community well and keep the community healthy. We had been involved with WIL with the Healthy Habits program, but beyond that, we were kind of doing things separately in terms of, you know, educating the community, encouraging the community to do physical activity and learn about nutrition and change their eating habits. WIL initiated the process and invited everybody to the table. My name is Nikki Hillier. I'm with the Champaign-Urbana Public Health District, and WIL is my source for keeping Champaign-Urbana families healthy.
It's 2:43. Angelica is a 19-year-old young woman who's been in and out of the juvenile justice system for years, ever since she got in a fight with a girl and stole her purse. When a reporter caught up with her this winter, Angelica had been out for a few months and life was rough. She got kicked out of her mom's house, which violated her parole. Her parole officer put a warrant out for her arrest. Today, Illinois Public Radio's Adrian Hill brings us up to date on Angelica and takes a look at how the system set up to help young people after prison can sometimes make things worse.
Angelica will turn 20 this weekend.
Oh my God, I'm about to be in my 20s. I gotta start doing things for myself. I do things for myself, but doing more, you know, taking more initiative.
We meet at a small restaurant with the Tyra Show chattering from TVs in the background. It's the first time I've been able to find Angelica since January.
Can't wait to get a job. I want to go back to school in June. Get myself in some criminal justice classes.
Angelica wears shiny lip gloss and mascara. Her eyes are brighter than they were this winter. She laughs more easily. She peels off one black sneaker and a striped sock to show me her new canary yellow pedicure. Angelica's life seems more grounded. She's not at her family home, but she's living in one place now.
Before it was like I was living in a collection of places. In a collection, you know, it's like Monday through Wednesday I was at home, and, you know, Wednesday through Friday, I was with one guy, and then the weekend I was with another. So I didn't have stability.
She likes having a bed to come home to that's hers, with a comforter and pillows that she picked out. She's also getting along better with her mom. She says she went to church 2 weekends ago.
It was nice. It's nice, real nice.
Tell me why.
Just because, I don't know, like, things are kind of coming together. They're not completely coming together. Once I get a job and everything, they'll really come together.
She still parties, still goes out with her friends. But she's worked her way to this better footing on her own. Actually, more than that, she's made her way to this more normal place in spite of the warrant that's out for her arrest.
Yeah, I do worry a little bit about it because my birthday's coming and summer's coming and I really want to be out for it. So I think as long as I just, you know, play it smart, don't try to do too much, I'll be all right. So I do worry about it, though, because I don't want to be locked up.
The arrest warrant isn't because Angelica committed a crime after she was released. But when she was let out, there were conditions. One was that she live at her mom's house, but she's not there, so she's in violation. Angelica's fed up with the system she's been a part of for so long. The warrant could hamper her plans to go to school, get work. She's tired of having to pay for a crime she served time for.
But the thing is, like, they just need to let kids go, you know? They're like stubborn parents that don't learn their lesson.
She says there's a part of her that actually likes having the warrant out for her arrest.
Kind of like a middle finger to DJJ. Like, your system doesn't work. I shouldn't be in your system in the first place.
She keeps her middle finger up while she talks.
You should have ended my parole, my paper. Whatever I had to do with the juvenile system should have ended a long time ago. And just leave me alone. Let me live my life already. Let me just be my own person without having to worry about what you guys have to say about it.
And Angelica's not the only person frustrated with the setup for kids after prison. Earl Merritt runs the youth prison in Chicago.
I can tell you that parole as we have right now is non-functional. It's just not working.
Merritt makes clear that he's speaking only for himself, not for the Department of Juvenile Justice, when he says there's got to be a better way than having parole officers from the adult system monitoring kids.
The whole idea and concept behind that adult parole system just isn't geared to the needs of our kids. It's not. I mean, I just don't believe it's enough to have a parole agent who stops in once a month, makes sure your electronic monitor is in place and that you are not dirty, and then I'll see you in another couple of months.
Merritt's worked with young men in the justice system for years.
If you talk to them individually, none of them strive to want to go back to being a gangbanger or selling drugs. But a lot of times when they go back out, that's basically, if there isn't a support system or some mentoring or somebody out there to help them, they're left with few choices.
There's a rallying cry for change in Illinois. Get kids meaningful help to reenter their communities and resume their lives after prison. And some change could be on the way. The director of the Department of Juvenile Justice recently outlined a plan for what's called aftercare. Kurt Friedenauer says the state will use federal stimulus dollars to help pay for youth and family specialists that will replace adult parole officers. Over time, he'd also like to add transition centers, halfway points for youth between prison and their community. But that'll cost money, something in critically short supply in Illinois right now. Youth advocate Julie Beal says not funding aftercare also has significant costs.
If you don't have successful aftercare, you're going to just keep creating a cycle of incarceration, and we can't afford that in our state.
Beal is an attorney and director of the Children and Family Justice Center at Northwestern Bloom Legal Clinic. She works with kids who are in the juvenile justice system. Illinois spends about $85,000 to keep a kid locked up for a year.
Incarceration is an incredibly expensive solution versus going to public school or getting a job or living with your family. So I think for public safety reasons, for humane reasons, for the point of being accountable to these kids, and also economic reasons, we should care.
Beal's hopeful about the state's aftercare plans and that a new model built for and around the needs of youth could bolster the lives of troubled kids. Adrian Hill, WBEZ.
To hear earlier stories about Angelica, and find out more about this series, go to the website of Illinois Public Radio Station WBEZ, wbez.org/inside and out. 10 minutes before 3 o'clock. The FDA has issued the first regulations on tobacco since Congress gave the agency power to regulate tobacco. These regulations clamp down on the marketing of cigarettes to children and teenagers. NPR's Deborah Franklin reports.
The new rule prohibits a number of ad strategies, like giving away hats and T-shirts with tobacco logos. No more selling of cigarettes in certain vending machines where kids can get at them. and there's to be no more selling of single cigarettes that are especially tempting to teens short of cash. Health and Human Services Secretary Kathleen Sebelius told reporters that she and the FDA mean business.
The historic rule we're issuing today will help our kids stay healthy by making it harder for tobacco companies to target them with harmful and addictive products.
Actually, many of the provisions in the FDA rule are already law in most of the nation. They were part of a 1998 landmark legal settlement between major tobacco companies and 46 states. But Thursday's action gives the state and local restrictions more bite.
It's a very important step forward.
Ellen Vargas is general counsel with the nonprofit American Legacy Foundation.
What's new here is that for the first time, all of these restrictions and requirements are brought together in one federal law under the jurisdiction of the Food and Drug Administration and its enforcement authority. We were very excited and pleased.
If tobacco giant R.J. Reynolds is not so pleased, David Howard, the company spokesman, didn't let on. He says his company wasn't surprised by the new regulations. They were mandated last summer when Congress passed the law giving the FDA authority to regulate tobacco.
We are not challenging regulation of the industry, nor are we challenging the authority granted the FDA by Congress in this matter.
But R.J. Reynolds and some other companies have already challenged some aspects of the FDA Tobacco Act in court. For example, in one recent case in Kentucky, a judge agreed with the company that some restrictions the FDA wants to place on the color and text used in tobacco ads impinge on the company's First Amendment rights to free speech. That case is now under appeal. Howard says the company has made no decision yet on whether it will challenge other provisions included in the new rules.
We look forward to working together with the FDA on this because we believe that cooperation and open dialogue is the best approach to developing an effective, science-based regulatory framework for the tobacco industry.
Some of those other matters going forward include proposed rules restricting outdoor tobacco advertising near schools and playgrounds. The FDA is asking for public comment on that proposal. Health and Human Services Secretary Kathleen Sebelius says preventing that first puff on a cigarette is key to saving money and lives. She points out that nearly 450,000 Americans die prematurely from smoking or exposure to secondhand smoke each year at a cost of almost $100 billion.
And yet we know that every day, nearly 4,000 kids under the age of 18 try their first cigarette, and 1,000 of those young people become daily smokers.
The new rules aimed at protecting children and teens are among the first to be issued by the FDA under its new legal authority. Later this month, a new FDA committee will consider whether adding menthol to cigarettes makes them even more addictive and whether further regulation is needed. Deborah Franklin, NPR News.
CNN correspondent Christiane Amanpour will be moving to ABC in August to take over the anchor chair at This Week. Amanpour, who is best known for racing across the globe from hotspot to hotspot, is expected to bring an international feel to This Week, a program known for its emphasis on domestic news. NPR's David Folkenflik has the story.
The 52-year-old Christiane Amanpour was born in Britain, raised in Tehran, educated in the U.S., and 27 years ago, given her first foreign news job by CNN in Germany as a young desk producer. Since then, she's become just about synonymous with CNN's coverage of foreign news. Rome Hartman is executive producer of BBC World News America.
She is maybe the most impressive foreign correspondent on television over the last 20 years. She has done everything all around the world and in many ways sort of invented the form.
Hartman says in her early years, it was still pretty new for TV news to go live on a big story abroad, whether Iraq's invasion of Kuwait, civil war in the Balkans, or slaughter in Rwanda.
She was sort of the perfect person at the perfect network where she cared a lot and knew a lot about big foreign stories, and CNN wanted to own those stories. And she was the way they did it for a long time.
Yesterday, ABC News announced it would steal CNN's star reporter to fill its vacancy on This Week. Amanpour tells NPR that she is honored to be following in the footsteps of David Brinkley, Sam Donaldson, Cokie Roberts, and most recently, Stephanopoulos.
The DNA of this program is set in that it has a really compelling relationship with the audience. It has the interview, it has the round table, it has all the different perspectives. And now I hope to bring my perspective as somebody who's really been in the trenches, literally and figuratively, all over the world.
The Sunday morning news shows are remarkably similar, with a heavy focus on domestic politics. They don't have giant followings. This Week comes in second place each Sunday with about 2.2 million viewers, but it's a valued and upscale demographic. What's more, it also provides a rallying point for the news division. Amanpour says she intends to introduce some different newsmakers and different issues.
People do want to know about the world, not just in an abstract way or an exotic way, but in a way that they can understand how the world affects them and how they affect the world.
She's going to have to prove it. At the moment, it's untested.
Andrew Tyndall is a consultant to the broadcast networks who keeps an exhaustive database of news stories at TyndallReport.com. He says the announcement fits the recent pattern of high-profile anchor appointments at ABC News.
Christian Amanpour, who they hired to replace Stephanopoulos, is another celebrity journalist with a major name. What they're doing is they're spending money at the top of their organization chart to keep major names, major faces in their anchor desks, and cutting money underneath them on the nuts and bolts of news gathering.
Recently, the network announced it will cut hundreds of news division employees. Amanpour says ABC is nonetheless committed to allowing her to give a serious treatment to foreign affairs. Along with her hosting duties at ABC's This Week, she's been promised the chance to do primetime documentaries for the network. Amanpour will start in August. David Folkenflik, NPR News.
Support for today's broadcast comes from Subaru of Champaign County, now on Route 45 in Savoy. At Subaru's assembly plant in Lafayette, Indiana, a zero landfill status is designed to save cost and our future. It's part of what makes a Subaru a Subaru. Information online at SubaruofChampaign.com or 352-4700.
Earth and sky.
The science has been coming in, saying that global warming is real and human caused, and it keeps getting stronger scientifically.
You're listening to Chris Mooney, journalist and author of the 2009 book Unscientific America. Mooney spoke about the reasons behind what he calls American inaction on climate change.
So it's a problem of politics plus the media leading to our inability to function on this issue. It's because we're a divided country and we handle science issues according to, you know, politicization and divisiveness rather than according to what the science actually says.
Mooney pointed to the decline of print media and the rise of political blogs. He believes good communication of science may now rest with scientists themselves.
So the scientific community, it's going to have to find new ways of getting that information out. It may be the case that we cannot, you know, get society to act on the best scientific knowledge that we have, and that would be catastrophic.
He said that scientists have learned a powerful lesson about the need to communicate what they know with the public.
Well, I think the scientific community is ready to change in a fundamental way in terms of how it engages with the public. And that does mean that, you know, one key part of the equation is, I think, going to be functioning much better. And hopefully that will create a more scientific America slowly.
I'm Jorge Salazar. Earth Sky is a clear voice for science.
We're at earthsky.org.
This is Illinois Public Media, WILL, 580 AM and 90.9 FM, HD2 and HD3 Urbana. Online at will.illinois.edu. Good afternoon. I'm Celeste Quinn. Thanks for joining us today. Our technical director is Jason Croft. Coming up next, the world from